You are listening to Microchurches, a podcast for missionaries and leaders living out their God-given calling through this small expression of the church. This podcast is meant to encourage, equip, and contribute to the overall discussion of this smaller way. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy. You are listening to Microchurches, a podcast for people brave enough to be small. This is your host, Tommy Wilkerson, and in this series, I'm calling this one Microchurch Conversations. So earlier in the season, we had a series called Network Conversations, in which we kind of looked at decentralized networks and things for decentralized networks to consider as they go about existing, growing, scaling, and all that fun stuff. But I wanted to maybe end this season looking back at the microchurch and looking at specifically what are things that microchurches can be looking at, holding on to, frameworks that might be helpful as they operate in their day-to-day life. And so we had an episode recently on social spaces and the role that that plays in discipleship and belonging. But I wanted to also kind of make a slight adjustment and kind of go a different direction. In this episode, we are looking at APEST and fivefold ministry and the role that that potentially plays in microchurches. And so I'm always excited to be joined by Stacy Gaskins and always incredibly grateful for her and for her leadership. And so, Stacy, thank you for hopping on this episode with me.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy. Good to be with you.
Granted, I think anybody listening to this episode would probably know what APEST is or Fivefold Ministry. It's not like it's a novel thing necessarily in our particular circles. But for the sake of context and making sure everyone's up to speed, this comes from Ephesians 4. So maybe it'd just be helpful to provide some sort of overview. And what we find when we look at Ephesians 4 is that we find that there are these particular offices that God gives the church for the building up of his church towards unity so that there's maturity and that they won't be swayed to and fro by everything that's happening, every gust of wind. I'm not actually looking at Ephesians 4 currently, so I don't totally know what it says. But there's these five particular offices that are given to the church. And it's, of course, it's the apostle, it's the prophet, it's evangelists, the shepherds, the teachers. And of course, maybe what we've seen over the course of time, and if maybe you've heard this in a previous episode that we recorded with Alan, is that, you know, in our traditional Western church, we have kind of biased towards the shepherd and the teachers. And there's a whole bunch of church history behind why that happens. You can look at Alan Hirsch's Permanent Revolution. I believe he talks about that. And what the downside of that, what has ended up happening, is that the more generative gifts, so you have gifts that are a little bit more maintenance and helpful in terms of stability, that would be your shepherd and your teachers. But the gifts that are a little bit more generative, the apostles, prophet, evangelists, because those have kind of been shifted out of the church, what that has meant is that those gifts have found themselves in, or those offices have found themselves in maybe more parachurch ministry situations. So if you're an apostle, or if you're an evangelist, or even if you're a prophet and you're someone who is maybe more geared towards justice, you find these other causes because maybe the traditional church hasn't necessarily been conducive to you and to the way that God has wired you. But what we're trying to say and do, and I think what Alan Hirsch and a lot of his work has been helpful in contributing to, is that it's forced us to think not just in terms of shepherd and teachers, but what is the power of the church if we use all five of these offices? And so, of course, you have your apostle, and Stacy, you can feel free to fill in any missing gaps that I'm because I'm just spitballing at this point. But of course, you have your apostles, and your apostles, these are your sent ones. They are the custodians, guardians of the DNA of the church. They are always looking at yet to be explored lands. They're the entrepreneurs. And so they're maybe the classic image of a missionary, the one who is sent on mission and goes and starts things. That's your apostle. And then maybe after that, you have your prophet. And so the prophet is very vertically aligned. And so they are listening for what God is saying to us and to a particular people group in that particular moment. Typically, like I mentioned earlier, geared towards justice and the poor. And yeah, they're just more concerned about, man, is this God's will? And so that's like their heart. And then you have the evangelist who sort of acts as a bridge between the church and the lost. And so they're great recruiters to the cause. They tell stories and tell the story of the gospel and what God is doing in the world. And whereas the apostle is more geared towards multiplication and growing the church through multiplication, evangelists might be more geared towards growing the church through addition. So they are sharing the gospel, the good news with people. They are that person. And so they help win people to the cause of Christ. And then shepherds are the people who kind of care and help make sure that they're nurtured and looked after and healed and whole. And so not just like, yeah, you've come to know Jesus and that's it, and we're glad for you. But no, what does like your soul look like, and concerned about the overall welfare of the community and guarding that? And so they care for the hurting especially well. And then, of course, you have your teachers who are what they sound like. I mean, they're people who are concerned with truth and doctrine and making sure people understand. And so you can see how when you have all five of these, it really is sort of a robust picture of maybe what an operating ministry can look like and be like. And of course, all five of these find their zenith, their origin, in the person of Jesus. And so, Stacy, I don't know if I missed out anything. That was just me like rapid fire, but you can chime in on anything I dropped.
It sounded great to me, Tommy. So much of what we've learned about APES really has come from leaders like Alan. And I think probably most of people listening will be familiar with that Ephesians 4 text. And one of the things that Alan and Tim point out in their book, Permanent Revolution, is that the gifts are for equipping. And they talk about how that word equipping is about resetting a bone. That's the image of that original word. And that the gifts are for that kind of equipping, resetting of the bone for works of service, for obedience, action, activity. So, you know, as we think about APES, these gifts, they help us to mature so that the body can walk and ultimately stand against the principalities and powers that dehumanize and crush humanity. So I think, you know, the part of what we get from that Ephesians 4 text, you know, you were sort of talking about how maybe a couple of gifts have been elevated in some communities over time over a couple of the others, is that, you know, Ephesians 4 teaches us there's no maturity in isolation. And that we really need every person who is the gift. The gift isn't like a skill or something a person's been trained to do. They can get better in the gift, but the gift is the person that Jesus has made them to be. And we need each gift in order to be able to mature fully. So I think that's probably why, part of why we value it. You know, when we think about the life of microchurch. So we're probably not overly prescriptive in the way we talk about APES and train for APES in the microchurch, but I think we've probably found it helpful to use it as sort of a diagnostic sometimes, to let microchurches sort of self-reflect on, you know, who is in your community and what are the gifts that they're bringing, and is there anyone that's missing? And how might that missing gift be impacting the life of the microchurch? And so that's probably a little bit more, you know, how we've talked about it as we've thought about it in our microchurch life.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting to, I guess, unpack or sit with, because I do hear from time to time, and maybe it's just because in our network, we do operate so much on the premise of calling. Like we don't tell people what to do as much as we encourage people to listen to the voice of Jesus and do what he calls them to do. And yeah, maybe in other ecosystems or other networks, we do hear a little bit more of like, yeah, you can't officially launch until you have all these people in place. And I think I've just always wondered, like, how does that work with calling, right? Like, yeah, sure, you can have an apostle, prophet, you can have the whole five, but what if they all feel called to different things? And so it's not necessarily that the people themselves are it. There's got to be this binding thing that is calling. But then if you operate with calling first, then you might not necessarily get all five, especially in the beginning. And so I guess I am curious, like, how does, I think the diagnostic image works well. But yeah, how does fivefold pertain or like relate to a microchurch or fit in with a microchurch that is operating based on calling? And how might it demonstrate itself in those environments, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly no expert on APES, but I think in our experience over the years, we have really led with the idea of every person is called by Jesus to participate and own some piece of the redemptive work he's doing in the world around us. And we have this deep belief that if Jesus is the one calling, that Jesus is also the one equipping and gathering his people around that desire that he has for wholeness in our cities, in our neighborhoods, and in our communities. And forgive me, I won't explain it well, but I've heard Alan Hirsch talk over the years about how even though we're more full and we're more whole when we have all of the gifts operating, that when Jesus calls us into a space, especially in the beginning when something is starting, there are times when we won't have someone with every gift in the group. And that there is this work that the Holy Spirit does to allow a person to be what they need to be in a season as Jesus calls them into something. So I think we've seen that happen over and over, as sometimes just one person comes to us with an idea that they have, that they feel like the Holy Spirit has prompted in them. And they're dreaming about that idea, that place, that people, and seeing a microchurch born there. And as we've walked with that person over time, we've seen that they've grown and matured in giftings, and also that God has brought people around them. But that the Lord has really enabled people to step out and take risks for the kingdom before all of those things were in place. So I think, yeah, we would never want to hold someone back and say, you have to have all of these in place before you go, because we do have that deep belief that Jesus is the one calling, Jesus is the one sending, and that he'll be faithful to provide what's needed when he, you know, gives us a task to do.
That's good. And it does seem like a very real tension there, right? Like, we wouldn't want to hold somebody back. And yet, like you're saying, there is like, it is helpful, and it is something that, you know, God does give his church. And so it should be something that, even if it's not the thing that you organize around, like, you do have some sort of value and appreciation for it. And maybe part of the task as a leader is to help your people also have some value and appreciation for it. Like, to know and identify, okay, this is how God is wired me and has gifted me, because, I mean, they too have their own callings as they sit within microchurches. And so I guess the question then for me becomes, well, then how can leaders make space for the identification of people's different APES mixes? But then also, how can they leverage that, use that for the strengthening the building of their microchurch?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were recently having this conversation in our microchurch. And I don't know that we've ever been prescriptive to our family of microchurches in Tampa about when to use the APES or how to use it. It comes up, you know, in the calling lab, in an environment like that. We've done something around it recently at the leadership summit. But I think it maybe is a natural progression of a microchurch developing and wanting to keep maturing and growing through the phases of microchurch development. And, so even in our microchurch recently, it's a little bit about like self-awareness. And that's sort of the conversation that we're having, like, what are the gifts that are in the room and what are the gifts that are missing? And the gifts will impact the way you do a thing. You could have three different people doing ministry, and they'll each do it from a different perspective, a different core question, you know? And I think we were all having this sort of intuitive it's pretty obvious in our micro church that we have a couple gifts that dominate, and we do currently have a lot of teacher shepherds. So, you know, we can really lean into whiteboards and long Bible studies and handouts, and people feel really cared for in the micro church. You know, we have a couple of folks who are, they've fostered over the years, and it's been a really difficult sort of long journey for these two families that are fostering siblings. And, you know, they always say that that sort of shepherding aspect of the community has really allowed them to have a space to walk that journey and be supported and to process that well. But we have a few people with apostolic gifts, and we have virtually no one with like evangelist or prophet type gifts. So we were sitting around having this conversation on Sunday, just like, what impact do you think that has on the community? You know, and we were talking about how laughing uncomfortably about wondering if we have any unresolved conflicts in the community that we've just been avoiding and looking away from, or, you know, like how we have to be intentional to occasionally just pause and ask the question, like, is there some hard truth that Jesus is trying to lead us into that we're glossing over, you know, we don't have a prophet there. And our microchurch loves harmony. And you find that the more you identify gifts in the room and people are able to ask their questions from that place of gifting or give their input or their wisdom from that place of gifting, it can do two things. It one can increase tension in the group, because what the prophet thinks is important for us to pay attention to right now is really different than what the shepherd thinks is important for us to pay attention to right now. So when they're both activated, it can increase tension in the group that you have to pay attention to and learn to navigate. But it can also maybe, I think our hope in having the conversation is increase creativity and the ability to say, like, where do we need to grow? You know, maybe an example just from our conversation is deciding, you know, one week a month, we just need to not have our normal sort of Bible study gather in the living room rhythm. And we need to have a couple of things that we're doing on a Friday night together that are just like fun and open and incredibly hospitable that we can invite people into who don't know Jesus yet, who are going to be super intimidated possibly to come into that space where we're sort of heavy on some of the Bible study and shepherding aspects. So, you know, we're talking about canceling once a month, and we're designing some things on Friday nights and game nights and potluck dinners, and everyone had different ideas, but as a part of that rhythm, because we're trying to ask the question from the evangelist point of view, who we have no super gifted evangelists in our group, who's missing, and what would it take to see our friends take a step closer to Jesus, and how do we create more spaces where that could become more possible? So I think doing something like an APES test, having some sort of self-evaluative diagnostic type conversation as a microchurch, part of that's about raising awareness, self-awareness of the group to say, man, what are the gifts that are just like activated here that are serving us so well? And what are the questions we're just not asking? Because we don't have those people in the room. So then maybe the conversation becomes about how do we fill the gaps, you know, when there are gifts missing from the community.
That's so good. There are so many things that you just said that I'm like, oh man, I want to like zero in on each of those things. And so maybe we'll just kind of walk through that. And so I love that you tell the story of your own microchurch and how, yeah, there's this recognition that, yeah, we are a shepherd and teacher heavy group. And that presents its own kind of dynamic within the microchurch. It shows up in these ways. And so first of all, like you had mentioned that, Yeah, there's like in activating these different types of people, you might see different kinds of tensions between different kinds of gift sets or whatever. And so we'll get into that. But I'd be curious to even, I don't know, almost like as a thought experiment, like, okay, well, if that's what it looks like to have a group that's really heavy in teacher shepherd, what might it look like if a group was heavier in another way or was dominated by another way? And so, yeah, you mentioned really concerned with Bible study, people feel really cared for, and those are all awesome things. But then there are some things that do get overlooked. And maybe that has to do with the core question that different offices ask. And so I'd love to, I don't know, if you've thought anything about that or have any thinking around, okay, if it was dominated by an evangelist, it might look like this, or like to help kind of people, oh, yes, I think I see that in my current microchurch, how that might play out.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. We may have pulled some of these thoughts from some of our favorite people, so I apologize. This may have come from Alan or Brad Briscoe or Jared Woodward. I'm not sure, but, you know, like I talked about with shepherd teacher, you know, we know that when shepherds dominate in an environment, you can tend to have a group that is risk averse, potentially, maybe at its extreme. There could be sort of a lack of healthy dissent. You know, we avoid conflict, so it decreases creativity in the group. And when you lean super heavy into those shepherding pastoral roles, you can tend to lack innovation and creativity. And then, of course, when teachers dominate, we've talked about that, there's sort of like an emphasis on ideology and unpacking and learning and wrapping the mind around the truths of God, which is a really good thing. But taken to its extreme, you could have a group that can become overly moralistic or care more about certain controversies than they do about just taking a risk to love people and trying to articulate the gospel, even if you don't get it perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. So it can be a little bit more rationalistic, doctrine-based, maybe. Whereas maybe if the apostolic gift dominates at its extreme, you know, it can tend to be a little bit like hard driving, go, 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 you know, new things constantly on the horizon, maybe a little autocratic, lots of pressure for change and development, rapid change and development. And if there aren't other gifts to balance that out, a potential repercussion of that could be tired, burnt out people, maybe even some wounded people in the wake of that. If there isn't someone to sort of pay attention to how is all this change impacting people, you know, as we run ahead. So you can see each one has like a massive gift it brings to the church, but also can have a shadow side. You know, maybe if the prophet dominates, the group will be a little bit one-dimensional, sort of always harking back to one or two key issues that prophet really cares about and thinks the group needs to care about. At its worst, you know, it could become a little bit maybe factious or sectarian, maybe. It could have like a super spiritual vibe to it, where it's sort of like everything is up in this high sort of prophetic space. Mm-hmm. Or it could tend to be either super activist, too activist to be sustainable, or maybe too quietist to be useful is a way we've heard it talked about. When the prophet dominates. And then maybe for the evangelist, if an evangelist gift sort of is dominating a group or an organization, at its worst, maybe it becomes a little bit obsessed with the idea of numerical growth and sort of metrics and how to drive towards that. And it can create a dependence on a kind of charismatic leader, you know, someone that has the ability to sort of draw people in. That's how we can sort of get dependent on that kind of leadership. But it might lack some theological breadth to it. It might not always go as deep as the church needs it to for a full maturity, you know. So you can sort of see examples of how each one, taken to its extreme, you know, has this shadow side that can impact the group. But each one has this just massive gift that it brings when it's brought in the midst of the other gifts.
Yeah. And I guess even to hear that, it's like, yeah, the reality that, okay, to even talk about going back to your microchurch, it's like you have a group of shepherd and teachers, and that's, there's a way that those two can, you know, butt heads for sure, right? Like shepherds might want to spend more time caring for each other, getting into what's happening in each other's lives, and the teacher might not be concerned about any of that, you know, or if they are concerned with it, the answer is, well, you just need to learn this truth from scripture. That's obviously what you need, not like a long conversation about your feelings or something, inner healing prayer or something. But yeah, there's a way in which, you know, the more gifts are present, it's not like that decreases tension. It's like more tension is possible. And so the tension between, apostolic people and evangelists, or the prophetic and the teachers or something, it's like the tension is there. And it becomes a question about like, okay, well, as you have these things present, how do you manage it well? Because it can, like, as hard as it is, it can be extremely generative, and should be extremely generative. And I guess the challenge for people who maybe experience those tensions of like the apostolic person who's hard driving and wanting to constantly see things started and pushing people to do new things, and the shepherd who just kind of wants to care for the people who are present, is, yeah, how do we balance that together and see that, okay, you're not wrong, and you're not bad, but we need each other. And so I don't know if you have any, I don't know, insider wisdom into how people can be trying to juggle that tension between being different, but also needing each other.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any super helpful advice there. Maybe that's part of the self-awareness thing. Maybe the gift that taking time to just pause and evaluate, like, what are the gifts present? Who is that person? What's the core question that they're concerned about when it comes to sort of our journey together as a faith community? Maybe what that does is help us understand where another person's coming from. So, you know, if we want to think of like a little strategy or something, you know, maybe part of the work is to identify gifts that are present in the microchurch, which is about people. It's about the person, like identify the gift that they are to the community, to find ways to affirm that, to name that, to affirm that in them, to affirm it in the group. Find ways to invite their input and their ownership over the group, which I think was maybe one of the great outcomes of the conversation we had this week, which is, you know, the sort of handful of apostolic voices that we have in the group, and maybe the one prophetic voice, you know, they got to really sort of share from their perspective, like, what is a way that we could grow, you know, as a microchurch. So to invite that input and ownership, and then as a community to really have a commitment to listen to one another and the perspective that the other person is coming from, to try and understand why they're bringing that perspective. And the same way that you probably can't do the three parts of the ecclesial minimum every single meeting in one space all the time, you know, you're probably going to have rhythms where 1 week you're sort of being really led by one or two gifts, and another week there are other gifts that are being activated. So there's probably like rhythms the microchurch needs to develop. But yeah, I think having those spaces to stop and take stock of who's here, who's present, what's missing, how well are we doing at listening to one another? You know, is there a gift that or a question that represents one of the gifts that we just haven't asked in a long time in our group? You know, maybe that helps us to get there when it comes to the tensions that we're experiencing.
So good. So good. And maybe that takes me to maybe our last question, which you've hit on this a couple of times, but I'd just love for you to maybe expound on it just a little bit of, one, what you're doing in your own microchurch with this, but even what you're just talking about now, like to say, okay, well, yeah, we're recognizing that we don't have this gift present or this office present within our microchurch. And so how do we counteract that? Like, we don't have it. So of course, one strategy is to pray for it, which we should be praying for it, that God would send people who he feels is what our group needs and helps us be the church that we feel called to be. But in the absence of that person, how do we try to, preemptively think like that person? And so, what can microchurches do if they're, a group of shepherds and they don't have any evangelists or whatever, or if it's a group of evangelists, but they don't have any teachers, or, if someone's missing someone in the fivefold mix, how can they sort of work to build, bridge the gap?
Yeah, maybe some strategies to help fill the gaps. Like you said, I do think prayer is one of them, that we have this sort of combination of intercession and listening prayer and being on the lookout that maybe there is someone that God wants to bring into the microchurch that, is a part of some other circle that we're in life right now. So to be asking Jesus who that is, I think to just increase our level of like invitation to people into our microchurch. So to just keep inviting what we refer to as, we got this from our campus ministry days, potentially missional Christians and missional Christians. So just looking for more PMCs and MCs to invite into the microchurch, because the more that door is open and we're able to invite people in, the higher chance we're going to see a better gift mix happening in the microchurch. I think for us locally, if you're out there leading a microchurch and you have the gift of having a network that you're plugged into, or some sort of church that has a high value for missional activity that you're plugged into, I think utilizing network-wide events to get perspective and tools and inspiration in gift sets that you're missing is like really important and helpful. So, we have a weekly gathering for missionaries here. And often the way that, teaching happens or worship happens or the call around communion, often there'll be a different gift set leading that from week to week in our community. And so we can come there and maybe hear someone who's more prophetic sort of, give that sort of hard call to align to some truth that we might be missing right now, or to sort of have that apostolic spirit in the room sort of helping us to lift our eyes and look and see, like, what is it God's at work doing and who's missing and where in our city have we not seen a church really mobilized yet, So utilizing those sort of network-wide events, I think, is a really helpful way to plug in and be near other people who have those gift sets that your microchurch might be missing. I think that's part of what's like really good and beautiful and useful about the citywide church, and being plugged into that.
Yeah.
Some of it is maybe about the maturity piece. We've already talked about that a lot, raising awareness. How do we may have gifts in our microchurch and we just need to mature in them, We might have people who are sort of young and they just realized recently that this is maybe the gift that they have. We need time to use it and to take risks and to fail in it and to have people help us grow in it, So some of that's about raising awareness and giving people opportunities to take missional risks and walking with them in that to help them mature in those gifts.
Wow. I feel like that brings up a whole other question about like, how do you help people mature in their stuff, but I do want to be sensitive to time, so we won't get into that in this particular episode. Maybe that'll be for a part two some time down the road, how to help people mature in their spiritual, their gifts and wirings. And so Stacy, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me and to talk through APEST and how that pertains to microchurches. If you are listening to this episode and you're wondering where do I go from here, well, I mean, there are no shortage of books on fivefold ministry to check out. So of course we've mentioned Alan Hirsch and the Permanent Revolution here on this podcast, but he also has another book called 5Q, which gets into that on a whole nother level. I believe Neil Cole has a book called Primal Fire, which gets into the fivefold gift mix. And so you're more than welcome to look at that. And then, of course, J.R. Woodward, he has a book called Creating a Missional Culture that also gets into fivefold gift mix. So it's there. There's no shortage of resources. And so we'd encourage you to check those out. And if this has been helpful to you, we've done our job. And so thank you so much for listening. This has been Microchurches. Until next time.